Have you ever just, you know, stopped and thought about the absolutely incredible unseen world that's buzzing away inside your own body right now?
Mm.
Not just the big stuff, but the tiny, tiny machinery making it all work. It's kind of mind-blowing and honestly feels like a total black box sometimes.
It really is an intricate dance happening constantly beneath the surface. And understanding that microscopic world, well, it's fundamental to getting how we actually live and breathe and think.
Totally. Well, today on the Deep Dive, we're aiming to shed some light on that mystery.
Yeah.
We dug into some really illuminating lectures by Dr. Ty C.M. Hoffman, who's an expert guide through the basic building blocks, cells and tissues.
Right.
And Dr. Hoffman's insights, they really give us a shortcut to understanding how our bodies actually work, from the tiniest little gears up to the complex structures letting us move and think.
Exactly. So the plan today is to start by looking closely at the individual cell, what's inside, how it works, how it deals with its surroundings.
And then we'll zoom out a bit, see how these amazing little units team up, collaborate, and build the specialized tissues that form, well, everything else in our bodies. Should be quite a trip into life's engineering.
Okay, so to kick us off, what's the absolute first, most basic distinction Dr. Hoffman makes when we start talking about cells?
Well, he immediately points us to this really fundamental split in biology, two main kinds of cells. And what's key, as Dr. Hoffman emphasizes, isn't just about whether there's a nucleus or not.
Oh, right. You mean prokaryotic versus eukaryotic cells. What's the key thing Dr. Hoffman highlights there?
Precisely. So we're made of eukaryotic cells. What makes them special beyond just having that true nucleus is their internal setup. Eukaryotic cells have lots of these membrane-bounded organelles. Think of them as creating multiple separate compartments inside, like a house with different rooms for different jobs.
What?
Prokaryotic cells, though, they don't have a true nucleus or these other membrane-bound organelles. They're much more like a single open space. A studio apartment, maybe? Got it. Complex mansions versus studio apartments. And I remember Dr. Hoffman really hammering home the importance of the outer boundary, the plasma membrane, for all cells.
Absolutely critical. The plasma membrane is what defines the cell, separating in from out.
Yeah.
And Dr. Hoffman describes its structure, this phospholipid bilayer, as, well, almost miraculous.
Awesome.
Because these phospholipids have a part that likes water, the polar head, and parts that hate it, the nonpolar tails. So when you put them in water, they just self-assemble into this double layer.
Mm-hmm.
He points out this was likely a huge step in the origin of the very first protocells, life finding a way to create a boundary.
Wow. Okay, so it's not just a bag. It's a self-forming barrier.
Yeah.
But it can't just be phospholipids, right?
Yeah.
How does stuff get through? What else does Dr. Hoffman say is vital there?
He really stresses the membrane-bound proteins. These proteins are studded within that phospholipid layer, and they are absolutely essential. They act as channels, carriers, pumps.
Okay.
Exactly. Without them, many crucial things, nutrients coming in, waste going out, signals being received simply couldn't cross the membrane. They're the doors and bridges in the city wall.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. So moving inside our complex eukaryotic cell, Dr. Hoffman walks us through its little organs, the organelles. Can you give us the highlights, the grand tour?
Let's do it. Each one's got a vital job. First up, the nucleus. Dr. Hoffman calls it the doubly membrane-bounded command center. It holds our DNA, our blueprint, and importantly, it has nuclear pores.
Why are those pores so important?
They're the security gates. They strictly control what gets in and, crucially, what gets out, like the instructions copied from the DNA, keeps the master plan safe.
And right next door, physically connected, is
the endoplasmic reticulum, or ER. Dr. Hoffman notes it's actually continuous with that outer nuclear membrane, and it comes in two types. The rough ER looks rough because it's covered in ribosomes.
The protein factories.
Well, the ribosomes make the proteins, and Dr. Hoffman points out they aren't membrane-bound. Even prokaryotes have them. The rough ER's job is then to help modify those newly made proteins. Then you've got the smooth ER. No ribosomes here. It's involved in making lipids, detoxification, and storing things like calcium ions, which Dr. Hoffman explains are super important for making your muscles contract.
Okay, so proteins get made and modified.
Right.
Then they often need to be sent somewhere specific, right?
Mm.
The cell shipping department.
That's the perfect analogy for the Golgi complex or Golgi apparatus. Dr. Hoffman describes it exactly like that. The cell's receiving and shipping center. It gets proteins and lipids from the ER, sorts them, modifies them further maybe, and then packages them into little membrane bubbles called vesicles for delivery.
Like little transport pods.
Precisely. Sending them either elsewhere in the cell or even outside the cell entirely. It's incredibly organized.
And the energy source. Mm-hmm. The famous powerhouse.
That's the mitochondria. As Dr. Hoffman emphasizes, this is where the vast majority of ATP, that's the usable energy from your food, gets generated. It happens through cellular respiration, which basically breaks down food molecules using oxygen and releases carbon dioxide as waste.
And that CO2 is what we breathe out.
That's exactly what Dr. Hoffman connects for us. The CO2 you exhale is literally the waste product from your mitochondria making energy.
Mind blown again. Huh? Okay, what about cleanup crew? Dealing with waste or dangerous stuff?
Two key players there, lysosomes and peroxisomes. Dr. Hoffman calls lysosomes splitting bodies. They contain powerful digestive enzymes. The key thing is these dangerous enzymes are safely locked inside the lysosome's membrane, so the cell doesn't digest itself.
Ew, good design feature.
Definitely. And peroxisomes deal with harmful peroxide compounds, which are natural byproducts of metabolism, breaking them down into harmless water and oxygen, protective detoxification.
So the cell isn't just a soupy mess inside. Dr. Hoffman made a point about internal structure, didn't he?
He did. He stressed it's not just a bag of stuff. There's the cytoskeleton. It's an intricate network of protein fibers, microtubules, microfilaments, intermediate filaments. It provides internal support, maintains shape, and acts like railroad tracks for moving things around inside the cell.
Internal scaffolding.
Exactly. And all these organelles, this whole internal city, is suspended in the cytosol. That's the jelly-like fluid part of the cytoplasm. And Dr. Hoffman describes it as the place where the chemistry that is life occurs. It's the environment where everything happens.
Okay, amazing internal world. But back to the boundary.
Yeah.
How do cells manage getting bigger stuff in and out? Dr. Hoffman covered these transport mechanisms. What are the main ways?
Right. Beyond just small molecules crossing, he talks about vesicular transport. This uses those membrane bubbles, the vesicles, for moving larger cargo in bulk.
Like the Golgi uses.
Exactly. It can go outwards, called exocytosis. Think of gland cells secreting hormones. They package them in vesicles that merge with the outer membrane, releasing the contents. Or it can go inwards, endocytosis.
And there are different types of endocytosis.
Yes, Dr. Hoffman breaks it down. There's pinocytosis, which he calls cell drinking, bringing in droplets of external fluid. There's phagocytosis, or cell eating, engulfing larger solid particles, like how immune cells eat bacteria. And then there's receptor-mediated endocytosis, which is super specific. Receptors on the cell surface bind only to particular molecules, triggering intake, very targeted importing.
Okay, that covers the big stuff. What about smaller particles moving passively without the cell spending extra energy?
That falls under passive transport. As Dr. Hoffman explains, the driving force here is just the natural tendency of things to spread out, which is diffusion. Particles move down their concentration gradient from where they're more crowded to where they're less crowded.
Makes sense.
Now, simple diffusion is when small nonpolar molecules can just slip right through the phospholipid bilayer itself, easy peasy. But many things can't do that. Maybe they're too big, or they're polar, or have an electrical charge. For them, there's facilitated diffusion. It's still passive, still down the gradient, but it needs help from a transport protein, a channel, or a carrier to get across the membrane.
Like needing a specific doorway.
Precisely. And then Dr. Hoffman highlights a really important special case of diffusion.
Water.
Water. Osmosis. He defines it strictly as the diffusion of water across a selectively permeable membrane. And he uses tonicity and red blood cells to show why this is so critical.
Right, the shrinking and bursting thing.
Exactly. In an isotonic solution, the water concentration inside and outside the cell is balanced, so the cell stays normal. But put it in a hypertonic solution, saltier outside water rushes out, and the cell shrinks, which Dr. Hoffman calls crenation. Put it in a hypotonic solution, more watery outside water rushes in, the cell swells, and can even burst or lysis.
Which is why our body fluids have to be kept just right.
Absolutely. Maintaining that homeostasis, that stable internal environment, is crucial to prevent our cells from shriveling or exploding.
Okay, but all that passive stuff is downhill. What if a cell needs to move something uphill against its concentration gradient, like concentrating something inside? That sounds like work.
It is work, and that's why Dr. Hoffman calls it active transport. It requires the cell to expend energy, usually burning ATP. This is done by protein pumps embedded in the membrane. They literally force substances across against their natural tendency to diffuse.
And the big example he gave.
The sodium-potassium exchange pump. Dr. Hoffman points out these are incredibly abundant trillions in your body, especially vital for nerves and muscles. And here's the kicker he always emphasizes. Running these pumps alone uses about 40% of all the energy you get from your food each day.
40%? Just for one type of pump?
almost half your daily energy budget just maintaining these crucial concentration gradients, it really underscores the massive amount of hidden work constantly going on inside us.
Wow. Okay, switching gears slightly, but still fundamental, DNA. Dr. Hoffman dives into his key jobs. It's not just storage, right? It has these two incredibly vital active roles.
It absolutely does. Dr. Hoffman lays them out clearly. First, DNA replication. This is the process of making an exact copy of the DNA. It's absolutely essential for cell division, making sure each new cell gets the complete blueprint.
And how does it make such a perfect copy?
He explains it relies on the complementarity of the DNA strands. You know, A always pairs with T and G always pairs with C. This means each single strand can act as a perfect template to build its missing partner strand. It's really elegant. And he notes in this process, the original cell doesn't really survive as one entity. It divides into two new, fully equipped cells.
So it passes on the instructions perfectly and the division itself.
Cell division involves two key parts, as Dr. Hoffman describes, mitosis, which is the careful division of the nucleus and its replicated DNA, and cytokinesis, the division of the rest of the cell's contents. The goal is two genetically identical daughter cells.
Okay, that's one job, copying itself. What's the second big role for DNA? Using the information.
Exactly, that's gene expression. The process of actually using the DNA code to make proteins, which do all the work in the cell, Dr. Hoffman explains it's a two-step process. First is transcription.
Okay.
He uses a nice analogy. DNA is like the master reference book in the library, the nucleus that you can't check out. So during transcription, the cell makes a working copy of a specific section, a gene, in the form of an RNA molecule. It's like photocopying a page of instructions. And those nuclear pores we mentioned, they're crucial for letting this RNA copy out of the nucleus.
I got to get the instructions to the workshop floor.
Precisely. And that workshop is the ribosome. The second step is translation. The RNA molecule travels out to a ribosome, which Dr. Hoffman calls a molecular machine. The ribosome reads the code on the RNA, three letters at a time, and recruits the corresponding amino acids, linking them together in the correct sequence to build the protein, one amino acid at a time. It's molecular manufacturing based on the genetic code.
Incredible. So from the single cells universe, Dr. Hoffman then guides us up a level. How do these cells collaborate to form tissues? What's this area of study called, and what are the main categories?
This is histology, the study of tissues. And Dr. Hoffman makes it clear that humans have four primary tissue types: epithelial, connective, muscle, and nervous tissue. He often emphasizes that connective tissue is kind of his broad catch-all category for basically anything that doesn't fit into the other three. It's the most diverse group.
Gotcha. So let's start with epithelial tissue. Dr. Hoffman links this strongly to surfaces, right? Covering and lining.
Exactly. He explains that a key feature of epitheria is polarity. Every epithelial sheet has an apical surface, the free side facing an open space like the skin surface or the inside of your gut tube, and a basal surface, which is attached to underlying tissue via a basement membrane. This orientation is fundamental.
And how are they classified?
Dr. Hoffman highlights two main ways, independently. First, by the number of layers. Simple means just one layer thick, great for diffusion, like in the air sacs of your lungs. Stratified means multiple layers stacked up, providing protection against wear and tear, like your skin or the lining of your mouth.
Makes sense. Simple for exchange, stratified for protection. What's the other classification?
Based on the cell shape of the topmost layer, the apical layer, squamous cells are flattened, scale-like. Cuboidal cells are cube-shaped, common in glands and kidney tubules where they do a lot of secretion or absorption. And columnar cells are tall and column-like, often specialized for absorption like in your intestines. You can combine these like simple squamous or stratified squamous.
Are there any oddballs? Special cases Dr. Hoffman mentioned.
Yes, a couple of important ones. Pseudostratified epithelium looks layered, but isn't truly all the cells actually touch the basement membrane. They're just different heights. You find this often with cilia lining much of your respiratory tract. And then there's transitional epithelium, which is amazing, found in the urinary bladder and ureters. Dr. Hoffman explains it can stretch dramatically. The cells change shape from maybe cuboidal columnar when relaxed to more flattened and fewer apparent layers when stretched, allowing the organ to expand. Really clever design.
Truly adaptive. Okay, moving to that diverse catch-all, connective tissue. You said it's varied, but Dr. Hoffman pointed out a common structure.
Yes, despite the variety, bone, cartilage, blood, fat, and weaving, Dr. Hoffman emphasizes they all share a basic plan. They have cells, the cellular component, scattered within a much larger amount of non-living material called the extracellular matrix. It's the nature of this matrix, whether it's hard minerals, flexible fibers, or fluid, that defines the specific type of connective tissue and its properties.
Okay, let's hit some examples Dr. Hoffman covered. Bone.
Right. Bone has a very hard mineralized matrix. The bone cells, osteocytes, live in little pockets called lacunae. Dr. Hoffman described the typical structure of compact bone with its osteons or haversian systems. Then there's cartilage, also tough, but more flexible than bone. Its cells are chondrocytes, also in lacunae. He mentioned different types like hyaline cartilage, smooth, glassy, found covering joint surfaces and connecting ribs to the sternum, and fibrocartilage, which is packed with collagen fibers for strength, like the discs between your vertebrae.
And he clarified about those discs.
Yes, Dr. Hoffman always makes the point they don't slip, they can herniate, meaning the inner part pushes out, potentially pressing on nerves, an important distinction.
Okay. What about tissues designed mainly for connecting things or resisting pull?
That would be dense fibrous connective tissue. Loss of densely packed protein fibers, mostly collagen. Dr. Hoffman distinguished regular, where fibers run parallel, giving immense strength in one direction. Think of tendons pulling on bones versus irregular, where fibers run in many directions, providing strength against stretching from multiple angles, like in the dermis of your skin.
And the looser stuff.
Yeah.
The packing material.
That's areolar tissue, often called loose connective tissue. Dr. Hoffman described it just like that, packing material. It has fewer fibers and more ground substance, creating space. It cushions organs, holds fluids, and allows structures to slide over each other, like your skin moving over muscle, found widely beneath epithelia.
And fat tissue, more than just storage.
Adipose tissue, or fat, composed of adipocytes, fat cells. Yes, primary function is highly efficient energy storage, as Dr. Hoffman noted, but also crucial for padding organs and providing thermal insulation. He also mentioned that practical lab point. The fat droplet dissolves during slide prep, so the cells often look like empty rings under the microscope.
Interesting. And a couple more specialized ones, filtering and transport.
Right. Reticular tissue forms a delicate, web-like internal framework, a meshwork, in organs like lymph nodes and the spleen. Dr. Hoffman explained it acts like a filter. In the spleen, for instance, it helps filter out old, worn-out red blood cells, which he reminds us can't repair themselves because they lack a nucleus. And finally, blood. Dr. Hoffman classifies it as a mobile connective tissue. The cells are red and white blood cells and platelets, and the fluid extracellular matrix is plasma. Its job is transport, obviously.
Okay, we've covered covering, connecting, supporting. Now for movement. Muscle tissue. Dr. Hoffman emphasized its excitable nature.
Yes, excitable meaning it can generate and respond to electrical signals, mm-hmm. and its defining function is that it contracts, it gets shorter, generating force. Dr. Hoffman outlines three types. Skeletal muscle is what we consciously control to move our bodies. Its cells are long, cylindrical, and have visible stripes or striations.
The voluntary and striated, got it.
Then cardiac muscle, found only in the heart wall. It's also striated, but the cells are branched and connect at special junctions. And crucially, as Dr. Hoffman points out, it's autorhythmic. It generates its own beat. Thank goodness we don't have to think about making our heart beat.
No kidding. And the third type.
Smooth muscle, found in the walls of hollow internal organs like your digestive tract, blood vessels, uterus. Its cells are spindle-shaped and lack striations, hence smooth. It's generally involuntary and often autorhythmic, too, responsible for things like pushing food along your gut or controlling blood pressure.
Okay, last major category, nervous tissue, the control system. Dr. Hoffman identified two main cell types here.
That's right. The stars of the show are the neurons. These are the excitable cells, specialized to generate and transmit electrochemical signals, nerve impulses. Dr. Hoffman described their classic shape. A cell body, input extensions called dendrites, and a long output extension called an axon. They form the communication networks of the brain, spinal cord, and nerves.
And they don't work alone, right?
No, they have essential support staff. The neuroglia, or glial cells. Dr. Hoffman described them as the nerve glue, providing physical support, insulation, nutrients, and defense for the neurons. Importantly, he stressed, glial cells themselves are not excitable. They support the neurons that are.
What a journey. So this deep dive, really following Dr. Hoffman's path, takes us from the fundamental differences in cell types through the incredible complexity inside a single eukaryotic cell, and then shows how these specialized units build the four fundamental tissues, epithelial, connective, muscle, and nervous. It really lays the groundwork for understanding the whole body.
It absolutely does. It gives you such an appreciation for the sheer amount of sophisticated, coordinated activity happening constantly inside you at a scale you can't even see. It's truly humbling.
It really is. And it makes you pause and consider if, like Dr. Hoffman highlighted, just one specific cellular pump, that sodium-potassium pump, is burning through something like 30% of our daily energy. Well, just imagine the total energy cost of all the other countless microscopic paths needed just to keep you alive and functioning right now without you giving it a second thought. What other massive hidden energy investments are our bodies making constantly just below the surface of our awareness?